You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thanks for being here. So wearables, smartphones, headphones, smart home devices, there is a crazy amount of tech around us. I'm only scratching the surface of what my smart speaker is capable of. And oh my goodness, she's in so many rooms now. So this hour, it's a healthy dose of tech support and tips on how our devices can benefit us in this time of social distancing. Have you bought a new device during the stay-at-home order? Or are you about to hit buy on something pretty sweet? Hold on. What do you want to know about the device and how to incorporate it into your life? We're at 800-642-1234. Omar Gayaga is a technology culture writer based in Austin, Texas. Omar, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
So, good morning. Good morning. How has this pandemic changed our relationship to technology? What are you seeing?
I mean, it's changing everything, obviously. But I think with work, with school, I think we're seeing we're kind of stretching the bounds of what it is to work from home. You know, our homes are now our for many of us are our offices. It's where our kids are learning now. I think it's going to change a lot of the way, when we come back to work, you know, are people going to want to stay home? Are people going to want to do more telecommuting? And then also just the tools that we're using. I mean, I think a lot of people are video conferencing for the first time or first time regularly. And, you know, there's a lot of etiquette and a lot of trial and error that goes into that. So I think just, you know, our work habits, the way our kids are learning in school and having to be away from the classroom, I think that's going to cause a lot of shifts in the way we think about work and school and our social lives even.
Yeah, I mean, I just do a double take when I see all the Chromebooks piled up on the kitchen table, all the school-issued laptops, and then all the other devices just hanging out around the house. It's actually caused me to pause for a second. I mean, that was just a really fast escalation of tech in our lives.
Yeah, and then everything needs to be charged. So you have a million charging cables floating around the house. I think it's caused us to rethink, you know, what we need as far as technology. I mean, I think a lot of people were unprepared for the needs of their phones, of their needs of their computers. You know, does your, you know, desktop computer even have a webcam? Do you need to get one? I mean, a lot of these issues, people kind of really just snuck up on us. And a lot of people just had to rethink, what is my home office like, and would I, can it be better? I think a lot of people are rethinking their office chair at home. Like, I can't sit in this all day. So people are definitely rethinking that. And I think employers are rethinking, you know, what do we need to do to make our employees have a safe environment at home to work as well.
What is a work from home tech gadget that you have that you couldn't live without? What would you say there?
I think a good set of headphones. I mean, especially if you're doing a lot of these Zoom chats or video conferencing, I think if you have kids in the house learning, they don't want to hear your Zoom call for an hour at a time. So I think a really good, comfortable set of headphones is important. I think a lot of us rely on earbuds or whatever came with our phone. But if you're going to be using them all day, that gets really uncomfortable. So you really want to invest in something that you can wear for an extended period of time, something that goes over the ears and that doesn't cause you any physical pain.
Well, when you're shopping for that, it's hard not to be able to try it on and find out if it doesn't cause pain. How would you shop for a new set of headphones?
Yeah, that's really hard. I mean, comfort is a hard thing to gauge, especially with things like earbuds. But for over-the-ear headphones, I mean, anything that's got a lot of cushion on it, anything that's pretty durable. I mean, I think if you just look at the online reviews for an over-the-ear set of headphones, I mean, if you really want to splurge, Bose has, you know, really great headphones, but then also Sony. Just look at the online reviews and see what people are saying. If everyone's saying, oh, these pinch my ears and they're terrible and they're tight and I can't adjust them, stay away from those. Look for ones that people are saying, you know, are a good fit and generally can be worn for an extended period of time.
How truthful is noise canceling? Can they really offer noise canceling headphones?
They do, but the thing with a lot of those is if they're powered noise canceling, they may need batteries. So they're not the kind that you just plug in and use. So a lot of noise canceling headphones, you got to watch out for that. They need to be charged or need batteries. So if that's something that's going to be a problem, you might want to think about that. I have a set of Bose ones that I travel with, and those do need to be charged. And there's nothing worse than like being on a flight and, oh no, they ran out of battery and I can't use them now. So you got to watch out for that.
Do you like them?
Oh yeah, they're great. Yeah, actually, the ones I have are not noise canceling, but they are kind of Bose over the ear ones, and they're wireless. That's the other thing is when we think of kind of the over the ear headphones, we think of the ones with the long plug. Now a lot of them are wireless and they sound just as good. So I would also think about if you want to be moving around a lot, if you're going to be taking them with you on the go, think about a wireless Bluetooth set of headphones or one that can do both.
We're talking with Omar Gayaga. He's a tech culture writer. We're getting tips and support on our wide open world of technology that's keeping us connected during the pandemic. Your questions on your gadgets, your smart devices, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about new technology? Do you worry that your smartphone is listening to you? What about Zoom meetings and video conferencing? Do you love them or hate them? What types of things have you learned through video conferencing? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. So, Omar, the video calls, there have been some bumps along the road in ramping up to video calls. What is your suggestion to making these calls effective and productive?
Well, I mean, a lot of things we're seeing, the first week or two that people started doing this, we saw a lot of people complaining about things like, just bad sound, people that don't have microphones on their devices or aren't speaking into the microphone, bad lighting. I think that's something you need to think about is what do you look like? If it's a video call, what do you look like? Or do you have good lighting on you? Are you not backlit? But I think that the connection speeds have been an issue. I think people who are starting to do a lot of Zoom calls are realizing that maybe their internet speeds aren't good enough to support, a good video call for a sustained period of time. So I think a lot of people are looking to upgrade their home internet to a higher tier that can support that, especially if you're in a home where, you're doing that. Your kids might be streaming Netflix in the next room. Somebody else is using their computer for something else. So I think people are seeing the limits of their bandwidth with Zoom calls because video calls can use a lot of bandwidth.
And how do you test your upload and downloads capacity?
There's a tool you can download called Speedtest, or actually I think you just go to the website. I think it's just speedtest.net to kind of get an idea of what your wireless speeds are if you're, like, say, on a cell phone. Also, Netflix has its own tool called fast.com. That's usually the one I use because it's just really quick to remember, fast.com. And that will tell you instantly what your internet speed is. Now, one thing to bear in mind with that is on whatever connection you happen to be on at the time. Like, if your wireless speeds might be slower than your plug-in speed, if you have a router that you'd plug into directly. So you might want to bear that in mind. If you're testing your speeds over your phone and you're, like, on the other side of the house from the router, you might be getting slower speeds than if you were to test a computer that's directly plugged into a device.
Does that make a big difference to plug in directly to the router?
It can, especially if your house has kind of spotty wireless. If you have an older Wi-Fi router, or you have a large house and the router doesn't cover all the areas equally, that could be a problem. So if you're doing, very critical work, I would consider doing it on a computer at a desk, plugged in directly to the router. That'll probably get you your best connection.
We're getting a handle on all the tech in our lives with Omar Gayaga as our guide. He's a tech culture writer. How has the pandemic changed your household's relationship with tech? Do you feel glued to your screens, or have you powered down more often and ditched the blue light at night? Be part of this on smart devices in your life. The questions you have about them, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a minute with Omar Gayaga and your questions right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're spending the hour on tech and mastering our devices like smartphones, like wearables. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And these days, toothbrushes can tell us when we're applying too much pressure on our gums. Tech mirrors can transform our wall into a virtual workout session. Some of this feels like a Jetsons episode. So what do you want to know about your smartphone, your smart speaker, your tablet? Do you have a watch with GPS? Have you figured it out? Let's talk tech gear, what's working, what's not, 800-642-1234. We have the assistance of tech culture writer Omar Gayaga at our side for the hour. So Omar, some people have been able to get their, you know, difficulties with their tech answered quickly through like a customer support virtually, but so many people had relied on going into like an Apple store and getting, you know, whatever was wrong with their device diagnosed by a real person. How can people still get and receive tech support these days?
Yeah, I think, I mean, a lot of the services that existed before that might have suspended service for a little while are starting to come back online. I mean, one of the ones that I hear about a lot is called You Break It, We Fix It, which, you know, if you have a cracked phone screen or you know, you're having issues with getting your device, you know, even to start up, they do repairs. And I think they were offline for a little while, but I think they have come back. And now you can do curbside drop off of devices. You can call them. You can do a video chat with them, I believe. The Best Buy Geek Squad is still doing their work. So I think I thought as all this was starting to happen that there would be this uprising of kind of cottage industry video tech support, which I haven't quite seen that happen yet. I haven't seen that really take off, but I think it's an opportunity if you're a tech person and you want to make some money right now. That's probably a good line of business. I think it's really difficult right now. I think a lot of people are having to Google their way out of problems or call the manufacturer of their device, and that doesn't always get you an answer right away. I think one resource that I don't think people think of a lot for tech help is YouTube. There's a lot of really good explainer videos on YouTube of how to fix problems. Even things like, you know, my Windows device won't, you know, keeps rebooting, or I have a bad Windows update. You know, what do I do? There's usually a YouTube video that explains some of the processes for fixing those things. So I would browse YouTube, because especially if you're a visual person who has trouble following, you know, YouTube discussion. I mean, if you have trouble following discussion threads or Googling your way out of a problem, I think YouTube is a good resource because it can guide you step by step visually of what to do.
Well, let's take a call. Tom is joining us from Elgin, Illinois this morning. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. My question has to do with e-book readers. I want to know if when using an ebook reader, can you use it to audio hear the ebook being narrated instead of visually reading the book?
Good question, Tom. Yeah, Omar, what do we know there about the capabilities of e-readers?
I think this is the case, but I believe that Amazon's Kindle readers do sync up with audiobooks if you use Audible, which is part of the kind of Amazon ecosystem. I think Amazon owns Audible, which is does a lot of the audiobooks. So if you have Amazon Prime, you know, you have access to some free audiobooks. And I believe the way it works is that if you were listening to the audiobook version on through Audible, and you also own the Kindle version, I believe it syncs up between the two, so you don't lose your place. I believe that's the case. I would need to double check that, and I can do that here in a second. But yeah, I believe that's the case. I don't know of other services that do that. If you're just talking about Kindle ebook readers in general, usually Kindle is the one that I recommend as far as hardware. You can read ebooks on iPads. You can read ebooks on your phone, and they usually all sync up depending on what service you're using. But generally, Kindle is the best as far as ebook hardware.
And didn't I just hear Audible opened up its library of offerings?
Yeah, they are doing some free books. I don't think it's the entire library.
Okay.
You can get a trial and get a couple of free ebooks. They've been doing that for a while. But I've noticed that, yeah, there are some classics that are available for free. You just need to kind of check the Kindle library. Emma is a good one. Jane Austen, if you saw the movie recently, I think that was being offered for free that you could download and just keep. So, yeah, it's good to kind of check in on the Kindle store and see what's on offer for free that you can hold on to.
Tom, thanks. Let's go to Tim now, joining us from Green Bay with a question. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I was just wondering about 5G. You see all this stuff about possible health effects, and if you know anything about that or how fast it's going to roll out. I know there's some devices on meter readers and all that other stuff with 5G on it. I wonder if you could comment on that.
Tim, thanks. So the fifth generation of cellular network technology that is rolling out across the country. Omar, what do we know about this technology? Oh, can you hear us, Omar? I think we're having some...
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Speaking
I'm
of
sorry.
Technology. Just... No. Did you just inadvertently mute yourself?
I think I inadvertently... I did a Zoom faux pas. I muted myself back. You didn't hear me sipping my coffee. Don't do that. Don't do what Omar did. So 5G is kind of the next iteration of wireless networking. I mean, there's been a lot of weird... kind of conspiracy theory controversy around 5G. Don't believe any of that stuff about them it being related to coronavirus or whatever. That's been a very weird offshoot of the story. But 5G is kind of the next generation of wireless networking for our phones or all of our wireless devices that will be, I think upwards of 100 times faster than what we're used to. And it has rolled out in a couple of cities. Austin is one of the cities where it's been kind of in testing, Houston here in Texas. And we do see a huge uptick in speeds for people that have them. The thing with 5G though, is your devices probably don't support that yet, unless you have a very, very new phone. Some of the new Samsung phones support 5G. A couple of, I think LG has a phone that does it. None of the iPhones can support actual 5G yet. So if you have an iPhone, you're not getting 5G speeds no matter where you are. There is sort of a 5G Lite version that AT&T was testing out that might give you a bit of a speed boost, but we're not at 5G yet. It's still, the infrastructure is still rolling out. Cities are just starting to come online with it. But really the holdup is devices. It's just that a lot of devices just don't support that yet. Your laptop probably doesn't. Your home router doesn't. I mean, if you're using a wireless router. So really it's just a matter of getting these newer phones into people's hands that can actually support it.
Well, speaking of newer phones, we just saw the release of the iPhone SE. What do you think?
I'm hearing really great things about it, especially if you are not someone who wants to spend upwards of $1,000 on a cell phone. The iPhone SE has a lot of the same features that the iPhone 11s do as far as what's actually in it, as far as the processing chip and as far as the camera features. It's got a lot in common with the iPhone 11, but it starts at $400, which is much, much cheaper than, say, an iPhone 11 Pro, which is going to cost you more than $1,000. So it's a budget phone. It's smaller than the other phones in Apple's current line. But people really love the original iPhone SE. This is sort of the sequel to the iPhone SE from about 4 or 5 years ago. And it's getting great reviews because, for a phone of that price, you're getting a lot of bang for your buck.
Yeah, so, I mean, if it's so much less expensive than the other newer models, what are they leaving off of this phone?
It's a smaller phone. It doesn't have the kind of big screen features that some of the other phones do. I believe it's missing a few of the photo features. It doesn't have like this. If you look at the iPhone 11 Pro, it's got like three lenses on the back.
Cameras.
It doesn't have that. Yeah. So, I mean, you're looking at some very pro features that you're losing, but you're getting a phone that is almost as fast and has almost the same camera features as far as the software. It seems like a very good deal. And I think it's also Apple recognizing that, there's a lot of people that are just never going to spend that much money on a new phone. They're never going to spend $1,000. They need something that's a little bit better budgeted for people and that still has a lot of the features that are going to support the current OS. So this is Apple kind of acknowledging, there's a whole market that we're missing if we're only selling $1,000 phones.
Yeah. What do you see for tech companies changing their new product release schedules or any plans like that during this coronavirus crisis?
Yeah, I mean, there were some delays, I think, due to just some of these big conferences where they announced things being canceled, like the one in, I believe it was the Barcelona one was canceled, and then South by Southwest, where a lot of these announcements are made. But what I'm seeing is, Apple is still coming out with new products. We're still anticipating the launch of products from Samsung and other big companies. I don't think you're going to see the delays as far as the actual your product launches, but you may see shortages in the actual devices being available, like just because of production delays in China and just a whole period where we lost months of production time. So one good example of that is a Nintendo Switch, which is very popular right now as people are staying home. They want to be playing more video games. You cannot buy a Nintendo Switch right now in stores. I mean, they're just not available. And Nintendo is ramping up production of them because they're just not out there. So that was a situation where because of the slowdown in production and manufacturing, you're just not able to find those right now.
We have tech culture writer Omar Gayaga helping us out make sense of what's on the market, from setting up our home office to setting up our kids with their school-issued laptops, networking. What new apps and programs are you using to help you work from home? Are you confused about your download or upload capabilities? What new tech gear is causing you hang-ups? And what do you want to know about video conferencing like Zoom? Let's get in touch, 800-642-1234. We'll be back after a news update with Omar Gayaga and your tech questions on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a quick mention, join us each weeknight for The National Conversation. This is an NPR special where experts answer your questions, and then you can be part of the discussion. Go to npr.org/nationalconversation to share your experience, and then join us on the Ideas Network weeknights at 8 for The National Conversation. Right now, we're spending the hour on our tech devices. Oh, how we use them and need them. We're learning about electronics to help us work more productively and be more efficient at home. We've talked about noise-canceling headphones, smartphone accessories, wireless speakers, the latest tablets. Your questions, though, they're front and center at 800-642-1234. What feature on your smart speaker is super useful these days? I want to know, have you bought a new tablet or other device recently? Are you happy with the purchase? Let's talk tech. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We have tech culture writer Omar Gayaga, who is our guide. Omar, we're getting a question here about smart thermometers. How accurate are smart thermometers, and how do they work?
Well, the smart thermometers are pretty much, they work pretty much the same as regular thermometers and are about as accurate. The difference is that they can also transmit information to your phone and share that information with the company that sells the smart thermometer. The one I'm thinking of in particular is called Kinsa, K-I-N-S-A. And this is actually, some officials are very excited about this because if they can, you know, get the information on who has fevers where and kind of map that, they can help with tracking coronavirus cases if that ties in. The problem with smart thermometers right now is getting one. I just looked on Amazon, and the Kinsa model of smart thermometer, which is probably the most popular one, is completely sold out. It's not even, it's just says currently unavailable. You can't even kind of back order it. So I think the issue right now with smart thermometers is just supply. A lot of people have been buying these, and it's just hard to find them. So I think they're a great idea. If you don't, you don't have to share that information, if you tie it to your cell phone. But the problem right now is just availability. Thermometers are kind of in short supply right now.
Well, let's look at other things related to the coronavirus. One is this partnership between Apple and Google for a contact tracing app. What is contact tracing, with our phones, and how does that work?
Yeah, they announced this a couple of weeks ago, and it sounded at first like it wasn't going to be till May that we were going to see this technology roll out, but it's now looking like it's going to be this week. What Apple and Google are doing is creating a way to be able to track when there's an active coronavirus case, to be able to use the person's phone to kind of look back 14 days to see where they have been and who they've been in contact with. That would use Bluetooth. It would kind of ping, kind of see where the phone came in contact with another phone within Bluetooth range, which is a little bit longer range than the 6 feet of social separation, but it kind of gives some sort of picture of that. The problem with this would be that it would be opt-in, that it would only work for people who agree to download this app or incorporate it into their OS, and use it. So if only a few people do that, then it's not very effective. It only really works. It really does much if a lot of people adopt it and start using it. And then you can go back and look at these at where this person has been. So that's kind of going to be the issue with that, is it's not going to be, as far as I know, it's not going to be mandatory. No one's going to force people to use this. But it would require a lot of people to want to use it and to make it active in order for it to do much.
Well, I think that consumers are already very reluctant, given the track record of their sensitive data, that this may be a hard sell for the likes of Apple and Google.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's do you trust these companies they're already tracking your location. Do you trust them to also give them access to who you were in contact with, while tracking that location? It's going to be an API, which means that other entities, other organizations or companies can kind of build on that and make their own app out of it. So the hope is that, someone people do trust would be able to use that information, to use that technology and kind of build something out of it that people would want to adopt and use. I don't know that Apple and Google are the ones that people are going to trust with that. I mean, the companies have said they are not going to use that data for anything else besides this. But like you said, their track records kind of speak for themselves.
So kind of like an open source model to what they're building? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, it's going to be an API, which is kind of a tool that people can use to incorporate into their own apps or their own tools. So we're hoping that, someone like a CDC or someone like that is going to take this and make something out of it that people will want to adopt and kind of help with that effort to track cases.
We heard from Jerry in Ozaukee County, couldn't stay with us. Jerry asked if you could comment on how to clean our electronics and how often do we need to clean them?
Yeah, that has been a frequent topic of discussion in my house with all these devices floating around and in people's pockets and stuff. Phones and devices are pretty durable as far as, if you just want to take a Lysol wipe over them and kind of clean them that way and let them dry on their own. That's something that we've been hearing a lot with COVID-19 is that, if you're going to wipe something down, leave it. Don't dry it off. Let it stay saturated for a while. That kills the virus. The thing that's really intriguing that I'm hearing more about is people looking at this UV lighting kind of cleaning systems. I've actually spoken to hospitals that use that do UV lighting with N95 masks. They have a room where they expose them to this light and it does kill viruses and germs. So people are thinking, well, why not do that with your devices? And there actually are a few devices on the market that will UV clean your smart devices. There's one called Phone Soap, SOAP. And that is actually a device that you put your phone into and it kind of UV lights it and disinfects it. They actually make a locker that I've been looking at where you can put all your devices into it and do them all at once. And it even has a charging cable inside of it. You can be charging your phone and disinfecting it at the same time. I've been very tempted to buy that. I think it's $199, but there's cheaper versions of it that are in the $50 range that you can stick your phone into and it will disinfect it with UV lighting.
But when the kids get their crusty hands on your phone and it leave the remnants of their peanut butter and jelly sandwich from lunch, does that UV soap able to get through the crud?
It will not clean peanut butter off the cell phone, but it will, if there are germs in the peanut butter, it will kill those. But yeah, you're still going to have to wipe it down or clean it somehow. The good news is I used to be so paranoid about cleaning my phone because they didn't used to be very waterproof. You used to be able to mess up your phone by just, getting water inside of it. And now most new phones are pretty watertight. You're not going to get, mess them up by just, wiping them down with a damp cloth. But I used to be very scared that I was going to mess up my phone just by getting water on it.
Well, let's move on to keyboards. Apple just released its Magic Keyboard, which has a very high price point. They can go up to $350. What does this keyboard offer that may make the high price point worth it?
Yeah, I think Apple has been continuing to kind of redefine the space as far as keyboards, especially for its iPad. The Magic Keyboard is for the iPad Pro devices. And, this is sort of Apple's continuing effort to make the iPad kind of an indispensable business tool, to make it as close to a laptop as you can get without actually buying a laptop. And, iPads are competing against Microsoft Surface devices. They're competing against all of these kind of two-in-one devices from companies like Dell. So, you know, they've tried to make the iPad Pro into kind of a business machine and, you know, and almost indistinguishable from buying a full featured laptop. So what the new keyboard does, and I mean, this is a $300 keyboard, just so we understand what this is that plugs into your iPad Pro. But, you know, the reviews have been very good. I mean, it does a lot of things with gestures. It does a lot of things it has a trackpad built
gestures,
into it.
Gestures? What do you mean by that?
Kind of where you are, like on an iPad screen where you would, you know, run three fingers across it to do certain things or two fingers to scroll. The trackpad on this keyboard does those things as well. So you can use the trackpad to kind of do those gestures. I mean, I haven't used it myself, but what I'm seeing from the reviews is it makes the iPad behave much more like a laptop, and it does a lot of things that a laptop can't do because of the touchscreen. So it seems like one of those things that if you have the money to get it, it seems like a really great product. But you know, you're already talking about a more expensive version of the iPad, the Pro, plus a $300 keyboard. So you know, you kind of have to have the budget for that. It's definitely not it's more of a luxury or aimed at kind of business users.
We're talking with Omar Gayaga, a tech culture writer. He's helping us with our gadgets this hour, our tech devices, keeping them up and running and working for us and cleaned. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Omar, earlier you were talking video games. What are you seeing with video games during the pandemic?
Well, we mentioned Nintendo earlier with the Nintendo Switch. One of the reasons that system has been in such high demand is because right as all this was happening, they released a game called Animal Crossing, which has become a huge hit. It has become a kind of the signature game of the pandemic because it's such a calming, kind of sweet, very cute game that a lot of people are using just to kind of deal with their nerves. It's a kind of game that where you're kind of building things and you're on this cute little island and you can interact with other players. They can come visit you. So I think it's in a strange way, it has become sort of a social tool for people to kind of connect with their friends and kind of be in this you know, beautiful little online world. So it has become sort of the massive multiplayer game that no one expected, you know, to be this phenomenon. So there's a lot of Animal Crossing memes and videos, and just people have really gotten creative with the decor and the costumes and all that in the game. So that has been a huge, huge hit. The other thing I'm seeing apart from Animal Crossing is just people trying to find ways to play games online with family and friends. There's a line of games called the Jackbox games. Jackbox is a company that makes games like You Don't Know Jack, which has been around since like the CD-ROM era. it's kind of a game show that people have been playing for decades. They have kind of evolved into a company that makes all kinds of games like that, a lot of trivia games, puzzle games, drawing games, and they put them out into packages called Jackbox, which has five or six games bundled together. You can get them on the Nintendo Switch, PC. They've had a couple of hits recently that they've been reducing in price. Drawful 2, Fibbage. These are great games that you can play. And you can play them over Zoom. You can actually set them up, invite your friends, and then play them over Zoom. And that's one thing we've been doing in this house quite a bit.
We have tech culture writer Omar Gayaga navigating the vast open landscape of our devices and what's new with your questions, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're getting a handle on the smart electronics in our life with support from tech culture writer Omar Gayaga. So have you turned your regular home into a smarter home? Do you have a robot vacuum? I want to know if it's worth it. Is it worth it? Is it? Can you control your thermostat, your locks, your lights from your phone? What do you think of that? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Omar Gayaga stays with us for another 10 minutes. So let's talk wearables here for a moment, Omar. I know I've got one of mine on here. I have very poor steps this morning because, of course, I've been doing the show here for a few hours. But what are some of the new things wearables can do for us?
I was still thinking about smart thermostats and smart vacuums because those are two upgrades that I made in the last year.
That
kind of
really?
Changed my life. Oh. I got a Nest finally, and I got a Roomba, and they both have been working fantastic. I love both of them. As far as smartwatches, I mean, I think the thing that as they've evolved, I mean, I think the Apple Watch is still kind of the clear leader in the space as far as, you know, popularity and new features. They've started to incorporate things like 3G, you know, just wireless networking so that you can, you know, stream things through them and get updates that way. Heart rate monitors are pretty important in these devices. There's still a lot of basic ones that don't have that. But if you're going to buy one now, I would recommend one with a heart rate monitor. And what we're starting to see is them being incorporated into health portals. That you're starting to see ways that smartwatches can track your health, you know, just by being able to tell your heart rate all the time, just by detecting any irregularities or patterns in your sleeping or your heart rate. So I think you're starting to see companies like Apple get into the healthcare space through these devices. As far as consumers, I mean, I have a Garmin watch that I use for running and hiking. And for me, it's able to tell me my stress levels, which are very high at night when I'm playing video games. It's able to tell me my sleep patterns. It's able to tell me, you know, give me really good stats on, you know, anytime I go for a run, you know, and it does GPS. So those are the things I would look for if you're shopping for smartwatches. If you do a lot of, you know, if you plan to do a lot of hiking or traveling, something with GPS, and definitely something with a heart rate monitor. I got some Garmin watches for my kids for Christmas, and that was one of the features I was looking for, was heart rate monitor. Was just, you know, when they go running, when they do anything active, I want them to be able to see, you know, what their heart rate is doing. So that's something that I kind of a key feature.
Yeah, and you know, when I'm looking at the features and what they can do, I mean, I'm just like all gangbusters. Oh, I'm going to totally use this, and you know, I'm going to use all these features. But then when I get the watch, you know, I slack off and don't use all the capabilities that it offers.
That's the thing. I mean, yeah, that was kind of the Fitbit problem that we had for years, is people using them as sort of just glorified pedometers. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a function of just that they were so limited in what they could do when they first arrived, was that was basically all they could do. And they weren't even that accurate at that. But I think we've seen them evolve into much more full featured devices, you know, devices that can give you notifications from your phone, that can, you know, map, you know, wherever you are, you know, especially like if you're hiking. So I think they've just gotten better and more useful. Their battery lives have gotten better. So I think, you know, when you were always having to charge them and always having to deal with problems with them, they were less likely to be something you want to use all the time. I think the newer generations of smartwatches they've just evolved quite a bit. I mean, kind of like the way cell phones did from the first generations of smartphones to the second or third generations. I mean, I think you're just seeing a big improvement in their functionality and how easy they are to use. So if you kind of gave up on them in the Fitbit era, I would give them another look.
Let's take a call here. Kay is with us from Racine. Hi, Kay.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about there's so much gathering of information, and every smart gadget knowing so much about you, even when you're breathing, sleeping, doing where you are, everything. Isn't this Big Brother watching?
Yeah, what do we...
Isn't this the same thing as, you know, isn't there a risk?
Kay, thank you for the call. Omar, what is the security risks when you are plugged into all of these gadgets?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you've ever used, you know, a smart speaker like Alexa and just been having a conversation not to Alexa, if you've just been talking about something and then all of a sudden you start seeing ads in your Facebook for whatever you were talking about, that's really creepy. I mean, that is something that happens, and we see it happening, and we know that these companies are gathering data about us, that they are monitoring audio even when they say they aren't. You know, we've seen all this, and I think in the last 2 or 3 years, it's really been a wake up call. I think you're seeing the government get a little bit more involved and more concerned about this. At least before the pandemic, there was starting to be a lot more scrutiny from the government on these issues. I think tech companies, it's sort of on them to kind of figure out ways to reassure us that they're not doing this, but we know it's happening. So I think it's just a trade off. I think it's a matter of whether the convenience of some of these devices is worth the privacy that we give up. And a lot of people are opting out. A lot of people are saying, I don't want to be on Facebook. I don't want a smart speaker. I don't want these things in my house. I don't want them in my life. And that's perfectly valid. The problem is that as we're seeing now with, you know, Zoom becoming very popular, as we're seeing with Google Classroom being used for schools, sometimes you can't really avoid using these products or these devices. It's they're kind of ingrained into our work life, into our kids' schools. So it's very difficult to opt out when they become the default of what people are using. When Facebook becomes the mechanism for group meetups, you know, for your kids' soccer team, when it becomes the default product for your kids' school, I mean, how do you opt out of that? So I think what we're finding is people having to make these hard choices of, well, I guess I'm in this ecosystem and I don't want to be, but what can I do? And, you know, if you're really concerned, I would just kind of investigate what are some settings that you can choose in these products that will kind of minimize the privacy that you're giving up. You know, Facebook, Google, Apple, they all have kind of mechanisms you can use to opt out of certain features. So I would definitely look at that if it's a concern for you.
Can you just indulge me for a moment on the robot vacuum? How much of a game changer is this?
Okay. What happened was I resisted these for years because I just have that Catholic guilt of like, I don't want a maid. I don't want a robot cleaning after me. I should be cleaning up after myself. And it was that whole thing of like just feeling guilt about, you know, I'm not a slob. I should be able to clean up after myself. My girlfriend got one for her apartment and she loved it so much that she got me one. She's like, no, you got to get one of these, seriously. And it is a game changer. It is just being able to just run it and leave the house and let it run on its own, being able to get reports of how many dirt incidents, you know, you have in your house.
Seriously.
You know, like, oh my God, I'm so filthy. And just being able to set it like room by room, you know, like I can just set it in the bedroom and have it go for, you know, for however long.
So is yours on carpet or wood? Or tile?
In my house, I have tile and carpet, and it works just as well on both. It has these little kind of brushes that kind of pick up on the tile, and it runs over the carpet very well. They've just gotten, again, like the smartwatches, they've just evolved so much. When they first came out, you know, they were kind of spotty. They didn't always get everything. You know, they were not super great products.
And so expensive,
they've come a
too.
Long way.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's we've had these for like 10, 15 years. And they've gotten so much better and so much less expensive. I mean, you can get a really good one for under $300 now. And that seems like a lot, but think about how much you vacuum and how much time you'll save. And just being able to just run it on its own. You do have to kind of pick up things. You can't just leave all your thumbtacks and things on the floor. You got to kind of make sure that it's unobstructed. But they've gotten much, much better. I mean, even the basic Roomba models now are fantastic. I mean, you can spend a lot of money on these, or you can get one that's not too expensive, but you're still getting a really good, useful product for your house.
And then explain quickly here, Nest. What does Nest do?
Nest is part of this ecosystem of smart thermostats, and not only for setting temperature, but also kind of regulating your house. It can very kind of look at the weather, look at trends, look at how you use your home. And it has sensors that can tell, you know, when you're there and when you're not. And it can sort of regulate the temperature in your home so it's much more eco-friendly. It might save you money on your electric bills just by kind of setting the temperature to settings that are comfortable, but that also kind of help lower your bill. So they're smart in that way, in that they can kind of look at trends and how you use your thermostat and kind of figure out ways to kind of maximize your electric bill.
Omar, thank you for joining us.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
Omar Gayaga, he is a tech culture journalist based in Austin, Texas. Just ahead, it's On Point. Is a bailout coming for strained city and state economies? Let cities and states go down the bankruptcy route. That's what Senator Mitch McConnell said as states seek federal aid to shore up their pandemic-ravaged local revenues. We'll look at what to do about states and their dire fiscal futures. That's On Point coming up next. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.